This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ted Rossman, thanks for joining us again. Ted, Senior Industry Analyst at Bankrate. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Let's just start with the ballpark question. What did you think of the Fed's numbers or rhetoric yesterday?
I actually thought that the Fed was more positive about rate cuts than I had anticipated. Now, they noted there's a lot of uncertainty moving forward, but I didn't think that Jerome Powell threw too much cold water on the idea that there still could be maybe 3 quarter-point cuts this year, maybe June, September, and December are the best guesses. I mean, certainly he didn't come out and directly say all this, but didn't really refute it either. I mean, the committee's dot plot of projections has the median estimate of 3 quarter-point cuts this year. It's a close call. I mean, there were roughly an equal number of committee members thinking 2 cuts or fewer, but I think overall, especially given that recent inflation data has come in a little stronger than expected, I thought Powell talked tough about inflation, but he also left the door open for rate cuts. And I think that's really what the market heard and latched onto. And that's why we saw another record high with markets yesterday, is that they're eagerly anticipating these rate cuts.
You don't feel that 3 rate cuts is a pretty low bar? I mean, that's a funny measure for optimism to me.
It's funny. I mean, it might be a low bar, but it might be the best the market can hope for at this point. Remember back at the turn of the year, the market was pricing in about 6 quarter-point cuts
yeah.
this year. And the Fed was saying 3 all along. That's what they said in their December projections, and that's what they said in yesterday's projections. So there has been a gap that's narrowed. I feel like, you know, I guess the market's pretty happy with 3. I think they would like to see any sort of rate cuts. I mean, it's been a while. From a consumer standpoint, too, I think this higher for longer idea is significant. Let's face it, if you have credit card debt, it's expensive and it's going to stay expensive. Where we could start to see some progress, though, is, you know, let's say the average 30-year fixed rate mortgage falls from 7% now to around 6% by the end of the year, which I think is definitely plausible. That might start to open up some activity in the housing market.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so does 3 rate cuts equal 75 basis points off the 30-year fixed mortgage?
Mortgage rates are not set directly by the Fed. They tend to track 10-year Treasury rates plus a lender's profit margin, of course. In other words, mortgage rates tend to move in advance of the Fed because of those anticipations. And we've actually already seen some of that. The average 30-year fixed briefly crossed 8% late last year in October. And it's already fallen about a point with the expectation moving forward of more cuts. And then once the Fed actually does start cutting, this is going to be the start of probably a multi-year process. So, you know, even if we get 3/4 of a point in cuts this year, maybe next year it's 1.5 points. I mean, the crystal ball gets cloudy the further out you look. But in other words, once rates start to come down from the Fed, some of that's been priced into mortgage rates, but there could also be additional cuts to follow, which are going to get priced in over time. So I think the average 30-year fixed rate mortgage could be around 6% by the end of the year.
All right, I'll let that seep in there. That soak in, that's hopeful. That's good news. Just real quick, one last thing, Ted. If the Fed does drop it 75 basis points this year, how will that impact credit card rates or car loans?
Credit card rates are more of a direct pass-through from the Fed. So 75 points of cuts probably means your average credit card rate goes down 75 basis points. That's not going to make much of a difference from 20.75 to 20 flat. I mean, that's still a really high rate. The advice there is get a 0% balance transfer card to help you pay off your debt. Car loans, you know, those are influenced by the Fed, but also tend to track Treasury rates, you know, more of a 5-year Treasury in the case of your typical car loan. So those rates could come down a little bit. But honestly, the biggest barrier on the car side of things is that prices have been a runaway train, you know, not really rates influencing it quite as much
right.
as the fact that cars just cost a lot more now. The average is nearly $50,000.
And the inventory is maybe limited as well. I think that maybe the car dealers have changed forever the way they're going to stock cars.
I think a lot of this is wrapped up in how electronic cars have become, and that's something that has made it more difficult with supply chain shortages for semiconductors and other things. Also pricier. I mean, even to get like a side view mirror replaced is a lot more expensive than it used to be because there's all these components in there that are electronic. This, I think, is a big deal for the car business moving forward. It's a big deal for insurance and repairs as well because all of this costs more.
Oh, tell me about it. Somebody drove down my street when I was living in Minnesota with a baseball bat, and every car parked on the street, which is most of the people in my neighborhood did, or a lot of us did, they just went wham, 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 wham. And that's $1,500, $1,200, $900, $1,700. It was amazing.
Yikes, that's terrible. Yeah. No, this stuff really adds up. And it's something that's really hitting a lot of people because you think, oh, the solution is I'm just going to drive my car longer because it's expensive to buy a new one. And that's not a picnic either, though, because when you run into repairs and maintenance and higher cost of insurance, it's pricey either way.
Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate.com. Thank you, Ted.
No problem. Thank you.
By the way, right now at the half, Michigan State, the 9 is beating Mississippi State, the 8, 31-24. That's at the half. Let's talk to Bree Fowler, the senior writer at CNET. Hi, Bree. You're on WGN again. How are you?
Good. I'm a very proud Spartan, so I'm happy that Michigan State is up at the half.
You got brackets going? Do you have them winning at all?
I actually don't have brackets this year. I was a little late to the party, and my usual bracket organizer didn't do it. So I'm just along for the ride this year.
Enjoy the run. I wish you success. I got a friend here at the radio station who really cares about Michigan State. It's fun. The Department of Justice is suing Apple, saying its iPhone ecosystem is a monopoly. I don't even know what that means. What's the iPhone ecosystem?
Well, I mean, when you download stuff to your iPhone, it has to come from Apple's App Store. All app software comes through them, which means it gives them a lot of freedom when it comes to charging fees, taking a cut of what those apps charge, and regulating what goes in and out. And the government is saying that this is, you know, there are antitrust issues here that, you know, Apple has an unfair monopoly on that market.
So the government is suing Apple over the very interface of its phone then, huh?
Yeah. They don't let apps come in and out unless it's through them. Consumers only have one option to buy. Apple would argue that, you know, there are a lot of costs involved with running, you know, iOS and with running iPhones. And it's not just phones. It's iPads. It's Apple Watches, things like that, too. And there are security concerns. If you download apps from a third-party website, you're risking, you know, that those might be contaminated with malware or that they just may not be very good apps and hackable.
The expense notwithstanding, I wonder if I should care. That is, I'm looking at my iPhone right now, and yeah, I never even thought about it. But when I click on the app, if I want to go get something and load it onto my phone, I'm going through my phone. But there's not another tab here where I can upload apps from a third-party vendor, if you will. And maybe that would be cheaper. But to be honest with you, most of the apps I get are free for me. What's the harm to the consumer in all of this?
Well, I mean, a lot of apps aren't free. And also, you know, it costs those developers and those app companies money that you as a consumer are probably paying in the form of your personal information. You know, I always say if it's free, you're probably the product. And with apps, that's definitely the case. I mean, anytime you download anything, you should look at their privacy policy, exactly what kind of data they're collecting, things like that. And Apple, to its credit, is pretty good about informing consumers about exactly what's going on with those kinds of things.
What's happening with Reddit?
Well, Reddit shares are up about 55% right now. They had their IPO today and started trading on the NYSE. They started at $34 a share, and now they're up about $20.
Wasn't there some controversy about the way Reddit was managing its platform? There were a lot of upset people on Reddit, right?
Yeah, I mean, Reddit's been around for about 20 years, and they've, you know, had a history of financial losses, management turmoil, and, yeah, user backlashes that have, you know, made it hard for it to create a sustainable business. But it's used by 76 million people at last check. Some of those shares are going to some of those users, which makes it interesting as far as an IPO goes. Most of it's going to institutional investors like a regular IPO, but, you know, super users were able to buy. But its market value is still only about $6.4 billion if you do the math based on that $34 a share.
Right.
You look at something like Meta, which has, you know, Facebook came out about a year and a half before then. Its value is about $1.2 trillion right now.
Wow. I knew Facebook was all that, but Meta is valued at $1.2 trillion?
Yeah. I mean, but you have to look at it. It's share value, and it's, you know, just like any other company, it's valued at that because that's what people are willing to pay for the stock. Is the company really worth that? Does it create, you know, sales and revenue? It's a little different. That said, you know, Meta's annual revenue is about $135 billion a year, while Reddit is still below about $1 billion.
Real quick, what's the business with airlines sharing our personal information?
Yeah, this is more action by the federal government today and yesterday. The Department of Transportation is looking into how airlines protect our personal information as passengers, as customers, and whether those airlines are making money by sharing that information with data brokers and other parties. I mean, airlines collect lots and lots of information on consumers, and we don't really have a choice as to whether we hand that over or not. And that includes kids. And kids' data and personal information is regulated at a higher level than you and I's are. So that's part of what the federal government is looking into as well.
Bree Fowler, Michigan State grad, go Sparty, is
go Green.
Senior writer at CNET.com. Bree, thanks for visiting with us today.
Thanks a lot.
Well, just west of DePaul on Fullerton is the warehouse bar or pizzeria and bar, which has been there for a while, but they actually have new people running the joint. And one of them is Jessica Cordona, who is the general manager of Warehouse Bar and Pizzeria. Jessica, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you.
Do you guys have TVs up in your pizzeria and bar?
Yes, we absolutely do. We have TVs, 10 TVs in our pizzeria. And we're excited for March Madness that's happening this weekend. It's starting this weekend.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about pizza, but obviously that's what I'm wondering. Although you guys are by DePaul, you're right by DePaul, so I presume you got a lot of DePaul kids, but you're actually a Boilermaker place, right? You're the Purdue bar over there.
Yeah, we're a Purdue bar. The previous owners were Purdue alumni, so we've been a Purdue bar for about 7-8 years now, and we bring in a very big Purdue alumni crowd. We're excited for our Friday game. It's at 6:30 p.m. this weekend on Friday.
Yeah.
So we're having a watch party, and we are going to be a full house for sure.
Did you guys do this last year, and what was that like?
Yeah. Well, last year the team wasn't as good as this year.
Well, they certainly weren't. Now, they were really good last year, but obviously they famously flamed out in the first round. So I wish you and everybody more success this time. Talk to me about the pizza there. So what's the kind of pizza that you all serve there?
Yeah, so we have deep dish pizza, thin crust pizza, gluten-free crust pizza. One of our most popular pizzas is our Angry Italian pizza. And you can have it made thin crust or deep dish, whatever people prefer. We also offer our Warehouse Finest, which is a caramelized crust deep dish pizza as well. And we offer white sauce pizza, which is a Parmesan cream sauce, or the classic tomato sauce pizza, which everything is made in-house and made from scratch. So, yeah.
What's the Angry Italian like? What are the ingredients?
So the Angry Italian has Italian sausage, spicy soppressata, salami, spicy giardiniera, red pepper flakes, and mozzarella cheese. So if you guys like spicy, that's the go-to for sure.
It would be something like that. What's the go-to? What's the most popular pizza you sell there?
Probably the Angry Italian, our Carbonara Pizza, and our Chicago Classic.
And what's the Chicago Classic? What, describe that one for me.
Yeah, so our Chicago Classic has a tomato, homemade tomato pizza sauce, Italian sausage, red onion, mushrooms, green bell peppers, and mozzarella cheese. And you can add pepperoni if you would like. I'm a pepperoni person.
What's a Detroit pizza, or at least how do you guys make it? I see you have a Detroit style, too.
Yeah, so it's our Sicilian pizza. So it's like a square-cut pizza. It's just like a square cut pizza, and you can build your own pizza, put your own toppings on there, or we can make it one of our specialty pizzas as well.
Yeah. Seems to me like every time I see Detroit style, it's the way it's cut is important, in that it's maybe a thinner crust. There's not a deep dish Detroit style, is there? I mean, that's not.
Yeah, no. Well, our Sicilian pizza is a little bit thicker. It's got a little bit more cheese on it, but it is only square cut. It's 8 square cut pizza because of the way that it's shaped.
Yeah, sure. And then I guess New York style pizzas in a triangle. And then in Chicago, I think you can go any way you want. A lot of the places don't want to cut it, at least on delivery, until they'd rather you cut it.
Yeah.
And
But we offer pie cut, square cut, or if you don't want us to cut it, we can definitely just leave it without being cut, yeah.
So besides the Purdue crowd for Purdue games, is it a student pizzeria and bar, or do you get people from the neighborhood as well?
We get a lot of neighborhood clientele. We do get a lot of DePaul students, track team, soccer team. We offer catering as well. So we do a lot of caterings for their events, and they do most of their, like, beginning of their sports parties in our party room downstairs.
Got it. How's business, by the way? You guys doing okay? How's the customer situation going?
Business is good. It was just St. Patrick's weekend, so that was a huge weekend for us. A lot of people, more on Friday than Saturday was busy as well. But it's been really good for us with Purdue doing really well, and just summer coming along. It was a little bit slower in January, but that's because of the weather, and it's kind of expected. But we did a lot better than we thought we would in the February month, and it's been picking up ever since.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Jessica Cardona is the general manager, Warehouse Bar and Pizzeria on Fulton, just a little bit west of DePaul over there. Good luck to the Boilermakers, and good luck to you, Jessica.
Thank you so much.
Good to know about another business doing well in Chicago. Okay, let's go over to Steve Grzanich with more business news.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based Molson Coors is going retro for its latest Miller Lite ad campaign. Ad Age says an updated take on Taste Great, Less Filling will hit airways soon. Retired athletes Mia Hamm, J.J. Watt, Reggie Miller, David Ortiz, and Jorge Posada will be among the newest all-stars featured in the commercials. Taste Great, Less Filling dates back to the mid-70s. Chicago's Leo Burnett is the creative agency behind the new commercials. The first ads aired during college basketball coverage. More will be coming later this year during the Olympics and upcoming football season. A Chicago startup working on sensor technology to improve communication between firefighters has been named a rising star by MHUB. The Chicago Incubator recently held its fourth Revolution Awards to recognize companies shaping the future of manufacturing technology. It singled out Ascent Integrated Tech as a rising star. Ascent sensor technology combines localization and biometric monitoring to track firefighters in 3D space within multi-story buildings. MHUB is the largest independent manufacturing innovation center in the U.S. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Check the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. Let's talk about food prices. And have you noticed that we don't hear many people complaining about the price of eggs anymore?
Prices for eggs are still down significantly from where they were at their peak early last year.
Yeah, I can sense a but coming, can't you? We'll get to that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, remember the bad old days of December 22 and January 23 when eggs were an average of nearly $5 a dozen, and that's for the smaller ones, the grade A large size. Prices have come down steadily since then, back into the mid twos, but USDA economist Megan Schweitzer says prices are starting to climb again. They went up 8.5% last month, averaging $2.92 a dozen. Easter is one reason. Lots of eggs to die. And
new cases of avian influenza were detected at the end of last year in November and December.
Yeah, the number of hens laying eggs in the United States is down 1% from last year because of the bird flu. But, and this is a good but this time,
we haven't seen many cases in February and March so far this year. So if that trend continues, that could be good news for egg prices down the line.
And even better news is your grocery store may be using eggs as a loss leader.
You know, retailers will often, to bring people to the stores, we'll offer specials.
That is Shale Shagam. He's a USDA livestock analyst.
Depending on when they bought those eggs, in the short term, they may be willing to sell them for less at retail than they were buying them at wholesale.
Yeah, because stores want to keep you happy and coming back.
Nobody wants to go to the store to do their shopping. And even if they're given a rain check, they want to have the item available.
On the food calendar, it's National French Bread Day, and it's National Farm Rescuer Day, dedicated to those who support farmers in need. And we've shared many stories like that over the years of how neighbors and even strangers jump in and help when a farmer is hit by illness or injury or natural disaster. They plant, they harvest, and everything else that needs to get done. So let's give a hee-haw cornfield salute to those folks. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Our pizza brackets at WGNradio.com in the first round had 150,000 votes, and some of them are pretty close. What's the best pizza joint in the city? Now, how about this? Diaper brackets. At least I think that's what this is. Diapers for Good. Alex Goodfellow is the executive director at Share Our Spare. Alex, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Did I describe that correctly? You've got some sort of a challenge out there?
You did. I am also looking at your pizza bracket currently. It's a similar concept, but a little less on voting and a little more on making an impact for ending diaper need here in Chicago.
Before we do that, tell me what your organization is. Tell me about you guys.
Sure, yeah. So Share Our Spare is a local nonprofit, and we are focused on providing essential items to kids ages 0 to 5. So we know that there's a lot that goes into having a child, and I'm not just talking about sleepless nights and poopy diapers, but clothes and safe sleep options and strollers and books and toys. And so we collect all of those items and redistribute them back into the community to ensure that the youngest folks in our community have a strong start to life.
What did I see? Something like 1 in 2 kids or 1 in 2 families have trouble providing these things for their children?
That's correct. Yeah. Unfortunately, that number used to be 1 in 3, and we are seeing an increase in need throughout our community, and now it is 1 in 2 families that are experiencing diaper need.
Okay, so but it sounds like you do an array of supplies, but is the focus on diapers?
We do. We have a focus on all essentials. I think the biggest consistent need we have is diapers because they are so expensive. And you need to consistently have them, right? You can't just get one diaper and continue to use it. So diapers are a big part of what we do, but we really run the whole gamut of essential items.
So how does your challenge work then?
So we are taking the fun play, as you guys did with the Pizza Madness. We are also taking a fun play on March Madness called Brackets for Good. And the goal for us is to try and collect more diapers to distribute back into the community. We rely heavily on in-kind donations. And so we are gamifying the collection and pitting some folks in getting their competitive sides out with the competition to see who can collect the most. And each week, the winner of that week moves on until ultimately we have a diaper champion.
So do you have families or companies or other agencies that are collecting for you? I presume these are the people participating.
Yep, a little bit of everyone. We last year when we did this, we actually had an individual person collect, and her, you know, network won for collecting. But we do have other, you know, groups that participate that are businesses like the Mercers and PWCs of the world. So we are not shying away from one group or another. We need everybody's support in this. And so you can be an individual, you can be a church group, you can be a Girl Scout group, you could be a corporate group. So anyone, we are just looking to see who wants to reign as the diaper champion here in Chicago.
Yeah, right. So I could spend my own money and buy a bunch of them and give them to you, or I could network out and get everybody to give them to me, and then I'll give them to you, and that'll be my team contribution. You don't care how we get them, do you?
That's right. I think most people solicit family and friends. We do kind of a virtual link, kind of an Amazon link idea, so you can send that out. You can put it on your Instagram or your Facebook and just have folks buy them for you.
Yeah, no kidding. What a good idea. And how long have you done this, Alex, this sort of bracket challenge?
This is just our second year. We do drives throughout the year. They're, like I said, we rely heavily on in-kind donations. But, you know, with inflation and COVID and everyone's money getting a little tighter, we saw a decrease in in-kind donations last year. And so that's why we came up with this fun, competitive way to get folks engaged. And so it's just our second year doing it, and we're hoping to keep it growing and keep it going.
Is it too late for me to sign up? I mean, you have your bracket.
No, I'm writing your name down right now.
And then how would I get them to you? I could do the Amazon thing, but or do people physically deliver them as well?
Yep. So we can also coordinate picking them up. We have a truck that does pickups in the community. And if you're interested, you can just email us at info@shareourspare.org to learn a little bit more and get signed up.
info@shareourspare.org. The website is shareourspare.org. info@shareourspare.org if you want to email these good people. What a good idea. And I'm glad you highlighted the need. I'm sure a lot of our listeners want to help Share Our Spare. That's O-U-R, shareourspare.org. Alex, good luck to you.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having us on.
Alex Goodfellow is the executive director there.